Welcome back to Dark Florida, the podcast where we explore the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright spine-chilling stories from the Sunshine State and beyond. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and today's episode is a treat, especially for my fellow Bigfoot enthusiasts. But before we dive in, just a quick reminder, follow Dark Florida on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast. And if you have a story to share or want to be a guest on the show, email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. If you love what I do and want to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/darkflorida411. Tonight, I'm thrilled to welcome someone I've personally gone squatching with, Mr. Rick Rellis, a BFRO investigator who is currently based in Western North Carolina. Rick is retired from a professional business world during which he traveled the globe, but it was a road trip in 2010 across northern Wisconsin that changed everything. Alongside a colleague, he witnessed a Sasquatch cross the road in front of their vehicle. And that life-altering moment sparked what has become a dedicated journey into the world of Bigfoot research. Rick has since helped lead dozens of BFRO investigations, spoken at conferences, appeared on countless podcasts, and has even been consulted for Finding Bigfoot, where three episodes featured encounters he was personally involved in. He's also a musician recording under the name Just Rick, and his song Wood Booger Walk is available now on Spotify and iTunes. He's the author of The Field Guide to Bigfoot Stick Structures, now in its fourth edition, which is a must-have for any serious researcher or field enthusiast. And if that wasn't enough, he's also a partner in I Know Squatch, a Wisconsin-based company offering some of the best Sasquatch-themed merch out there. You can find them on Etsy, Instagram, and Facebook, and at events across the country this year. Today, we're going to dig into Rick's experiences in the fields and his thoughts on the connection between Bigfoot and the paranormal. And of course, the fascinating phenomena of stick structures. So grab your flashlight, charge your thermal camera, and settle in, because this is going to be a wild one. Rick, it is so great to have you on Dark Florida. I've had the honor of being on expeditions with you, but for the listeners who may not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about you and how you got involved with the BFRO and what drew you into this research?
Yeah, Brooke, I'm glad to be on here with you. Thank you for having me as a guest and being able to talk about this subject matter near and dear to my heart. Been at it for about 15 years. And I didn't go on out looking for Bigfoot. Bigfoot found me. So in 2010, I was traveling across northern Wisconsin. I was living up there at the time and with a business associate. And we saw something cross the road ahead of us, came across the oncoming traffic lanes, mass median, ran across the road in front of us. And I saw it leap over a fence. And we just couldn't figure out what it was. And you know, the gentleman I was with kind of went on the, must have been an elk or something, but I could see it was on two legs and had a reddish brown hair to it. Kind of, I went back, measured the fence, and the fence height was over 5 foot tall. And I just got hooked. I couldn't figure out what it was, dove into it. And there's no elk anywhere in that part of the state, nothing. And I kept seeing those two legs as it jumped, kind of hurtled. And I dove into it and found a similar report about an hour north of there in Wisconsin. This was northwest of Green Bay, a very wooded area, a Native American area, land, etc. And the other report I found, mentioned it was a Bigfoot-type creature, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is Bigfoot, what the heck, you know? So I started to dive into it, snowballed, researched, went on BFRO expeditions, became an investigator back in 2014-15, I think, investigated in the state of Wisconsin, all around that area. I moved to Tennessee, did some investigation work there. I'm in Western North Carolina now, near Asheville, and I investigate in this area now. I've been on or run and or led 35, 40 expeditions. I've been out in the woods searching, researching Bigfoot from British Columbia to Florida and places in between, Northeast, all over the Midwest. So I know it's real. I've seen these things. BFRO, they have Class A, Class B, and Class C sightings. Class A means you can clearly distinguish that it is not a bear or a human. And I've had three of those for sure. I have several that I would call Class B. And I know physically this thing is a real creature. You know, had rocks thrown at me by it. I've cast its footprints. I've smelled it, seen it, been scared by it, you know, seen the multiples, seen eye glow or the, you know, the eyes give off a light color to it. So I've experienced all that, you know, so there's no topic on this I can't really talk about from my own experience and or research. So I'm fortunate in that way. So I'm not somebody who just sits on a laptop and looks this stuff up. I'm somebody who's been there and done it. And you and I got out in the woods together, which is great. And had a little bit of that kind of stuff going on. So I'm glad to talk about any aspect.
We did. And you certainly are decorated. I mean, you've been all over and you've had so many things happen. I'm so excited that we get to kind of dive into those things a little bit deeper tonight. And since you've been on 35 plus expeditions that you've been on and led, what were some of the most standout moments that just really stuck with you? Was there any sort of compelling encounters or sightings on those expeditions?
Yeah, and I'll just drop them as incidents without having long stories on each one so we can talk about a variety of things. And I'm interested in your experiences too. I saw one in Colorado, Northwest Colorado, on Route National Forest. It was with five people in a canyon, and two of us turned. We had activity. They were around us, and this is where it gets crazy. But all five of us were watching a softball-shaped orb that was cue ball-colored floating around above us in the canyon, and we were all transfixed on that. This is just after dusk, and two of us turned and looked back down the trail, and there's a 90 feet away is a 6.5-foot-tall black Bigfoot standing right in the middle of the trail looking at us side to side as like a baseball player at an infield would. That's how I've always described it. But it was clear positive identification. We saw it there. Then it ran off to the side. So two of us clearly saw that. That was a good experience for me because I clearly knew, you know, what I was seeing. I was on one in North Georgia. That was in 2018. I was in North Georgia. Four of us on a two-track. It was a logging road up in the hills. We had some activity below us in a ravine and knocks and received knocks and knocks back. We'd gotten up, the moon was bright, and I turned, looked down the trail we had come on, because we turned around quickly because one of us in our group got a cell signal all of a sudden. We were in a devoid area of any cell signal, so the phone pinged, and we all turned and looked, and I saw something come up out of the ravine and belly crawl across the road and up into the higher ground above it, and it was gray and massive, and it was like a spider crawling thing. And so think one of these things down on its belly crawling. And I knew it was not an animal because you couldn't see any of the moonlight between its legs, you know, four legs going. It wasn't that. It was just this massive gray thing crawling across. And like a mass, you know, arms and legs moving like a spider. That's all I could describe it. It's one of the creepiest things I ever saw. So those are a couple. I'll tell you another one. I was on a North Central Tennessee expedition, an area I've been to a number of times. I won't give away the destination because BFRO, we always try to keep that, we don't tell people exactly, but we had an encounter. We had groups deployed all over a mountain, and there's trails on the sides of the mountain. The group down below, the furthest below, I was in the highest group up the mountain, but we were all walkie-talkie. We heard screams and howls and blood curdling up and down the hill, but the three guys down at the bottom, one of which was military, had an encounter where these things were basically ushering them out of the woods, and they saw three of them at different intervals in there, and the shortest one, they said, was 10 foot tall. The largest one they described as being 14 feet high. It was as high as the top of a backboard in a basketball hoop, they said. Now, that's striking to me. In black, one of them was hanging out of the woods, and they said the face and the visage of it, if you will, was sort of like that creature in the movie The Ring. It was like a black dreadlock hair hanging down looking thing, so that's creepy as could be. But to see three of them and the smallest one being 10 foot tall is pretty, that's a pretty shocking.
That's enormous.
I know, they're all, one of them actually was ushering them out of the following behind and reached ahead and touched one of the three of these guys on the head as they were leaving, you know. So, and he's actually a guy, I know he lives in Jacksonville, so this guy I go out with quite a bit. But, you know, if you can't experience Bigfoot sitting on your couch, you have to get out in the woods, just put yourself in a spot and then maybe, you know, maybe do some things provocatively to attract them. But I've come to the conclusion there are lots, and those are only three incidents I could go on. But, you know, there are lots and lots of these things out in the woods, I believe, because we're all amateur researchers, citizen scientists, call us whatever you will. We're out and we have weird things happen. When you and I were out, remember the first night we were out and we saw that big, that light orb thing in the woods. And it, I mean, several of us saw that.
We did.
And it was over 10 seconds. I think we said it was like 12 seconds or something. So, you know, how does that happen? And we were doing things, as you recall, we could get back to provocation. We did some knocks and some howls, and we had responses from the river area in the woods. And they come around. All of a sudden, here's this glowing light in the woods. We're all looking at it. And it wasn't that far away. And it kind of looked at us like it was observing. It was there a period of time and then just went. Now, how does that happen? How does that happen? I mean, we don't have a physical explanation for that.
Well, and then to note too, that where it was positioned, there was no humans or anything in the direction that the light was coming from. And where we were positioned was sort of in this natural bowl in the woods. Right. And so it's kind of, we were in that vantage point where something could come and observe us and maybe feel like they had some coverage. And so when I looked over and I saw that, I knew, like you said, it's coming from the river. There's absolutely no other group back there. It's just us.
Right.
What is that?
Right. And weird things happen in the woods when you're out looking for Bigfoot. I'm not afraid to talk about what I would call paranormal aspects of this entity, this thing.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the questions that always comes up on Dark Florida is whether there's an overlap possibly between Bigfoot and the paranormal and how those worlds kind of bleed together. Because you're right, we could be out doing Bigfoot research and the next thing you know, you get these orbs, strange lights, or something just outright paranormal happens. What's your experience with that?
Well, it definitely does happen. My experience is you should just be open-minded. And if you do crazy things, sometimes crazy things happen. I guess that's a good way to explain it. So, if you watch the shows, I'm not a big fan of when they're really, really loud knocking and banging on things. You know, it's as loud as they can, call blasting, whale sounds, and all that stuff to me is crazy. But I think that's too far. But if you're out there and you're, for instance, we play Native American music sometimes, and that projects in the woods. We'll do things with laser lights. I think I did that with you. You know, use laser lights under the canopy of the trees. If you do things that are interesting and you're in a spot, and I like to scout spots to be, as you said, we're in that bowl. We scouted during the day. We four-wheeled our way back there and found it. But if you get yourself in a position where you can be observed and you do, you know, non-harming, non-aggressive things, laser lights, Native American music, light whoops, light knocks or something, and I talk to the woods a lot. You'd be surprised, things happen. All of a sudden, you get surrounded. They're observing you. They toss pebbles at you sometimes. If they don't want you there, they're going to do something like push a tree over or to scare you or whatever, but to get you out of there. I think you got to pay attention to that. But if you put yourself in a position to be observed and you do some things that are inviting or curious, they'll come around.
I thought one of the things that you did when we were out was genius. And I've talked about it on other shows, but it's that pop gun that you have. Because like you said about going out and banging on trees and doing all that, sometimes you can't always find the right tree either. That's not reliable. If you wanted to do some wood knocks, because of just the topography and what's growing there and trying to find a hardwood tree isn't always as easy as it seems. There's a lot of pine and wet things and dead things, especially here in Florida. But I know you do, you know, research other places. But yeah, your pop gun was great. And I'll never forget that we had kind of gone into this one location. And you were like, let's try to do this provocation before we knew the rest of the group was coming down the road. And you used this pop gun. And I was just surprised at how loud and efficient that it was. And no joke, we got back that howl. And I tell people about that. Yeah. And it was so good we did it when we did, because about 2 minutes later, the rest of the groups getting set up in their spots came down the road. So we really, it was perfect timing.
What was great about that area we went into, and we should talk a little bit about that graveyard that was in there too. But we knew that that was not people, you know, because we had just gotten to that spot. We're back at, you know, we'd driven quite a ways back in the woods, and we got into that spot, and we knew there were no other people back in there. So that's the perfect time to do a knock type sound. I use the pop gun a lot because, first of all, it's light. You can put it in a, you know, light backpack to get out in the woods. And it does echo. It carries a long way. It's very effective. I had another friend of mine, George Wrigley, down in, he's an investigator in Atlanta, but he recommended it to me a few years ago. It was one of the best things I ever heard. So I carry that with me a lot. And it gets responses. And I'm with you. I don't believe that they're banging on a tree. I think there's another way they make this noise. I don't know what it is, if it's oral or if it's some other way they do it. But the knock noise, sometimes you hear them succession too, and there's no way they're getting the same, and they're equal. they're getting the same exact noise of a tree successively. You know, I was on an expedition in northern the UP of Michigan years ago, and the investigators were out as a group early one night, or before everybody got in on Thursday. We were out on a Wednesday night, and we had them and a couple of early arrivals. But long story short, we had 11 people. And we were together. We broke off and left two at this real spooky place. And then nine of us were going to go down a gravel road. And we were going to start deploying ourselves just to talk on walkie-talkies and do echolocation and do a relay, make noises back and forth. Anyway, we start down and we get about 100 yards away. And we get on the walkie-talkies. We get coming back to us, the two that were left. And they said, "Did you hear the knocks?" And a couple of us did. And they said, "Yeah, we counted them. And there were nine of them." Now, what is significant about that is we had 11 of us. Two stayed, nine went walking. So yeah, could they count? They've run into that before, too. I do think they can count. But there were nine knocks, almost as if to say to the others around, hey, nine of them are on the move. And I found that a fascinating encounter because, again, did they conveniently have a tree that they hit nine times? I doubt it. So it's like they counted and made that noise. Let us know. So the pop gun works great. It's not threatening provocation either. It's nice to do. I do that a lot of times, Brooke, when I go into like a trailhead, especially at night, you know, I'll pull out the pop gun and go, pow, if it's just me, if there's two of us, pow, pow, if there's two of us, just to kind of communicate, hey, there's two of us, we're coming in the woods. I think that works. I've heard them knock when I've gone. I had a research area in Wisconsin I used to go to all the time. And I'd go early in the morning, just the sun was coming up sometimes. But as soon as I'd get in there and start, well, it was a horse trail I knew they were on, and they were resident back in there. But they'd knock, as soon as I entered, pow! Like there's sentries telling the other ones, hey, somebody's here. So there's a language that goes on with that stuff, and we need to treat it that way.
Well, and that's something I wanted to ask you about too, because I know that you put out a book, four editions on stick structures. And I find that really interesting because I've always wondered what they mean. Could you just briefly explain the overview of what the book covers? Also, when those stick structures are in the field, are you noticing in where they're seasonal or what they might be used for or how they've changed over the years?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Stick structures, that's the thing about them. And I always try to debunk them too, because there are, you can have microbursts of, you know, rain and thunderstorms, that kind of thing, and tear up the woods. Pine trees are notorious because they have a shallow root system for going every which way. I'm not talking about any of that. They do all of a sudden show up in an area. You could walk on trails, forest roads, etc., see nothing, and all of a sudden you come upon a spot, and there's a lot of them. I was with a group in about an hour and a half northeast of Asheville, North Carolina, a couple of weeks ago. And we were hiking all over the place in the woods. We got access to some acreage. All of a sudden, we come on a spot, boom, there's a bunch of them. Now, how is that? You know, all of a sudden, in one spot, very, 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 very meaningful, you know, engineered, put together asterisk stick structure. And then next to it, a couple of these twist offs, these ones that are like an upside down check mark. All of a sudden, in one spot, bang, bang, bang. And then it's several of the little semicircle hoops. So they, to answer your question, yes, they will build them in a spot, and then you won't see them for miles, hundreds of yards, etc. And they are seasonal. They'll put them up sometimes. It's almost, maybe the kids do it. I don't know. Maybe it's an exercise and communicating. They'll put them up. I've seen them go up in the spring and come down in the fall toward the winter, that sort of thing. And I have, you can get the book. I have a business called I Know Squatch. I have a partner and it's an LLC. We have out of Wisconsin, but we have all original artwork. We have shirts and hats, lunch coins, stickers. The stick structure book is in there. You can go on it. We have an Etsy store and we're on Instagram, Facebook, and anywhere you go, communicate, you can see us and what we're about. But the book has in there seven different types, and I've got some ground glyphs too, because they will build things, lay things on the ground to communicate too, and they fall into patterns. But there's definitely patterns. The X is a pattern. They'll do build teepees or nest type things. Arches, the semicircles like St. Louis Arch, they'll do those. And, you know, you're always looking to debunk, but, you know, when one of those things is bent over and there's a rock holding one end of it down on the ground, I'm pretty sure that nature didn't do that. But when you get to spots where they are, the asterisk shows up a lot. I've seen them, curiously, in the woods behind churches and things. That shows up a lot. And the X's, I always look for Native American symbology and signs to correlate with this. And the X in Cherokee means friend. I was with a group in the Smokies few years back, and we had a spot, we had a fire. It was really cold, 30s, 20s, 30s at night. It was like February expedition. And, we had found stick structures. It was one area during the day. We went back and we were down below. They're up on the side of a mountain up, going up this trail. And we sent a group up the trail and they walkied back to us. Hey, they're here. We're hearing them. They're around us, every other kind of thing. We were hearing knocks and, kind of whoop noises on both sides of the trail. And so they came back. We sent another group up and we were communicating, talking to them on the way up because we already knew they were there. So we were saying, friend, one of the words that we use is NAWK, N-A-W-K, which means, we think means friend in Bigfoot language. And some of this, if you read any of the, 50 years living with Bigfoot, you get any of those, the Mary Green books, there's a whole language sequence in there that goes through that they observe with Bigfoot over the years. And I like a lot of those words and we'll use them. And NAWK is a word I'll use in the woods. And we were saying that on the way up the trail and we got to a spot and stopped. We could hear that about 100 yards below as they were moving from side to side. Couldn't see them. It was dark. There were three of us. And we were talking, hey, we don't mean any harm. We know we saw the stick structures you built in this spot during the day. We just came to because we're curious about you and this sort of thing. So we were in the spot, three of us, for half hour, 20 minutes. We decided we're going to go back to the main group down below. We started walking down the trail. We put our red headlamps on. And here's an X right in the middle of the trail. Now, we'd already walked up this. It was not there. And they had just made it because you could see where it was torn. You could see where the bark was torn on the ends. And it was torn out of mountain laurel, which is nasty stuff. I mean, it's hard to do. All the side leaves had been torn off it. The members of the X are about 3-4 foot in length, two pieces, and it's laying right in the middle of the trail. Now, they did that while we were up above. And we have been saying friend and communicating friend. So if there is a correlation to Native American symbology, that's a good one there. The X meaning friend, Cherokee. They laid that down as much as to say friend to us, too. So, you get back what you give with these things. And if you communicate positively and respectfully, I think you get some of that back. But that was a case where they made an X, laid it on the ground on the trail, was not there on the way up, and it was communicating to us, we think, friends. So that was good.
I agree, too. I think it's about your intent. I interviewed someone from Wisconsin not long ago, and he talked about how he came across a structure up there and how it was only in this one particular area. He tried to emulate the same frame of thinking in another, and it just didn't work. But that this particular stick structure was kind of like a map for the game trails in that area. Do you think that their meanings could vary state to state? Just like when you were talking about how they were 10 to 14 feet tall. I know here in Florida, there were reportedly a lot smaller than that. And so do you think that things such as stick structures, obviously appearance, that they vary state by state, or do you think that it's more universal?
I think it could vary, but I would say that they could be clan designations or address markers, or they could be, an X or an asterisk in Native American. Some symbology is like a male presence. I think there's some commonness to it because in my experience, even in Florida, I've seen, you do see over and over the asterisk, the twist off or acute angle, upside down, check mark kind of thing. That shows up a lot. X's for sure. TPs, nests kind of thing, they show up. So I think there is some, if they have, and some of us think they have a hive mind, if you will, so they can tap into a common collective brain trust, if you will. So I don't know if that's true or not, but there are some experiences that would say there are. If that's the case, then they would use the same type of symbology. So I find commonness with this than I don't when it comes to these things. But this gentleman in Wisconsin could be what he's seeing. They will change them. I've seen these things get built, an asterisk, and I go back. An area I would go in and a week later go back, see that they moved some of the members in the asterisk or added members to it, stick members. So they will do things to change them a little bit here and there. And I'm not sure what they're trying to communicate. They definitely do that with the ground glyphs. I've got multiple locations I deal with that have habituation, meaning they're on the property all the time. And they will communicate with these glyphs and put them right smack in the middle of the trail in the woods behind the property on a regular basis. And you'll see there's an F shape that they use. They'll put rocks inside of the F, and they'll use X's for sure. Y shows up an awful lot in the glyph. But these are real. I mean, I'm talking about, branches coming down out of the trees. I'm talking about these have multiple members to them, are laying on the ground in a place where the owners of the property are going back to a shooting range, say in the woods, and they're there to communicate, and they're laying them right there so they can be seen. And they will take the leaves off and the bark off, things like that, just to, I guess, get show evidence that they've tampered with it so that you know for sure it wasn't just something that came out of the trees.
Right, make it stand out. You talk about the hive mind, because that's a concept that I've been chatting with other researchers, because it does seem like once somebody has an encounter, it's almost like they're marked, that they could go into another area far away and these things will make their presence known, or there will be an uptick in activity, or just like how you said, one knows, they all know, because someone was discussing about like a firearm. They seem to understand that that's an aggressive sign. If there is a firearm pointed at them, they begin to act aggressively, which makes sense. But how would they know that it was a firearm and not just another stick? So they understand the difference that's there, and the hive mind comes into play with that, I think.
Yeah, I think it does. So they definitely have abilities, characteristic abilities, senses, things we don't have. A hive mind could certainly be one of them. Why wouldn't it? It would probably behoove them to have that. I'm kind of of the opinion they're not of this earth. I don't know how they got here or why, but they came here. They're here for some purpose. The hive mind could be part of that purpose. So if you read some of Tom Powell's books, he goes into, and I like him a lot, I've talked with him. Tom's Edges of Science, in my mind, is one of the best books you could read on any of this subject. And he'll talk about the hive mind. He had experience where he was investigating in Oregon. He would go to the same property and make the same noise all the time, and trying to get response back. And one night he fell asleep while he was doing it, and he woke up at 2:30 or 3 in the morning, had to drive all the way back to his place, which is 2 hours away. He gets back to his place, gets out of the car at his place, and out of the woods comes the noise that he was making 100 miles away. Now, how does that happen unless there's a hive mind? It's physically Bigfoot, unless it's stepping through a portal from one place to another. I don't know. But, how does that happen? I've had the experience where in Iowa on an expedition years ago, I got, in my mind, saw an image of a luminescent arch, a large arch in the woods. This is in the spring, I think back in 2017 maybe. And September of that year, I was very early in the morning in Wisconsin. I was out with another guy doing some research, 3:30 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, sun's coming up, and just barely coming through the woods, and I see this massive arch, and it gets illuminated by the early morning sun just crawling over the horizon, and it looks exactly what I saw months ago, and that it built this thing. I had forgotten about it until I saw that. Now, how does that happen? First of all, you got a distance, of hundreds and hundreds of miles apart, physicality, and it was an image I got in my mind when I was out Bigfooting on an expedition. Months later, I see it at another locale in the woods, the same exact image. Something is going on with these things relative to the, the mind. I was in Colorado Bigfooting with some folks, and one of the guys I was with, we were in a canyon, and we're hearing these noises, and I can't relate what they are. And the guy speaks up and says, "I know what that noise is." And I said, "What?" He says, "It sounds like a wooden pallet scraping across concrete in a warehouse. I can hear it." I said, "Well, what is it doing out here in the woods?" He said, "I hear that noise all the time where I work." He said, "Why?" I said, "Yeah, but I said, are they, they're creating the sound, mimicking that sound so you would hear it just from a relative standpoint, So what is going on there that they can, to your point, that they know intent before you get there, or they can tap into your thought processes or bring up a noise to stop you in the woods to make you go back? I've heard car door slam. I've heard circular saws, car alarms, babies crying, you name it. A plastic water bottle's crinkling. Where do they get these noises? They're great mimics. They can make them. But they got to know that in our mind, somehow, we can relate to these sounds. And they've got to share those sounds with each other across distances, because otherwise it would be locational learning isolated to a group in Texas versus a group in Washington State, versus a group in Florida. It doesn't make sense. But so getting back to the stick structures, the hive mind, et cetera, I think there's a common brain trust or brain mainframe that they can tap into. I've come to that conclusion that it must be something that helps them as a group.
When you were talking about the different languages that they speak, touching earlier on how the paranormal seems to blend with this, I think that they definitely fall into the realm of high strangeness. And when you were saying that it's something maybe not of this earth? Are you suggesting interdimensional, spiritual, or stranger, something else?
Well, I'll tell you how I kind of got to that. It's just, this is just me opining based on reflection, based on experiences. So Bigfoots, let's face it, if they want to foul electrical walkie-talkies, recorders, equipment, things like that that we have, they can do that. I mean, people, you've investigated, people report it all the time. Walkie-talkies go out, recorders go dead, GoPros go dead. I've been with a group where I had a guy had a phone, it was on 10%, and all of a sudden it immediately got charged to 100. Figure that out, that's reversed. So they can foul electronics, that's number one. Number two, mind speak, people can call it whatever you want, but I relayed to your listeners about having seen something in my mind, later physically seeing it, another point. I've had words show up in my mind, when I've been around these, once they chased me out of the woods and I kept hearing, run, don't look back, run. So how do they do that? So mind speak. So following electronics, mind speak, the ability to interfere with electrical energy, electrical things, that they seem to be able to do that sort of thing. Can't explain the orbs. We mentioned the orb, we saw one, you know, and the light and the lights in the woods are the orbs floating over your head. It's almost like the darn things are manifested energy that's observing you. You know, and I do think they're observing us. We're using those things for observation. How do you explain that? The light from their eyes, whether it's bioluminescent or it's reflective or emanating or however they do it emotionally. I don't know if they do that. So I'm counting up a number of things. They have superhuman strength. You know, there's reports of them picking up deer and carrying them away or lifting a cow up and carrying it off a property. Or you know, they have great strength tearing trees. I've been in the presence of them knocking a tree down or tearing a tree down and later going back seeing a tree and it's massive. Superhuman strength. They have the
throwing
ability to
boulders.
See. Yes, right. And they can see in the dark. I mean, they see terrifically in the dark. The one I saw in Colorado, there was no, it was like the pupil took up the whole eye. Okay. It was like a blackish brown, took up the whole eye. There was no white. I think the white is called a sclera, but it was like none of that. But they could see during the day, they can see at night, you know. So back to Tom Powell, he kind of has a hypothesis that they were brought here physically years ago for mining, you know, maybe mining underground or extracting gold minerals, etc. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case or not. If it has abilities that there's no other creatures on this planet have, and we develop abilities on this planet to adapt to the environment on the planet. I mean, we're subject to gravity. We have to be able to see very well during the day. Right? We're hindered a bit at night. Our minds have evolved to the point where we can manufacture and carry light if we need to, but we got our five senses, et cetera. It seems like Bigfoot has those five senses, but it's got another 5 or 10 more. So how is that? Why do they have those things? Because no other being on this planet developed all those senses, or they do in a small way. There's electric eels kind of thing or something. But why does Bigfoot have all these abilities? And if those abilities make it paranormal or have it give it the ability to be around paranormal entities, things. There's a lot of UFO and Bigfoot reports, right? I mean, there's lots of them. I used to deal with a lot of MUFON people have told me that. You know, I've consulted us to, hey, you guys in the BFRO, have you heard of, you know, Bigfoot and UFOs together? Yeah. Well, they get reports. There's Bigfoots around cemeteries and ghostly type activity. So get to our second night. We were together back in the early part of this year when we were on expedition. We went into that old homestead cemetery and we had activity, right? We had interaction with,
yeah,
like seemed like an old timer ghost entity, the white noise. We were getting words, right? We were
and intelligent responses.
Yep. Yes, we did. But we also, on the back of that cemetery, where that seemed most active, as we came out of there around, we heard crashing and banging in the woods over in that corner. And we went down that trail further. If you remember that night, we were back in the woods. We were getting responses to the same. We do a whoop and we get a whoop response back. It was exactly the same. And early that night, when we first got there, was when I was doing the popcorn and we got responses.
Yes.
It's not far to go out on a limb to say Bigfoots were around. And you and I, and you know, there were five of us that night, but we were spending time in that homestead cemetery and there was paranormal ghost interactive activity we had. I felt that thing go right through me. It was cold. It was like somebody opened up a spray hose and sprayed cold water on me. I felt that ghost thing go right through me. It was creepy.
You said you had that energy. And that's also something you hear with Bigfoot too, is they can zap people or you'll start to feel sick or get a headache. But yes, you guys were picking up on that energy. And I think I was too towards the end.
Yeah, I think you were too. Because I got out of there at one point. You stayed in there, I think, with John. But
yep.
You guys came around the corner, came back to where we were and Because, yes, where we were overnight there, we heard crashing and banging out the back of the cemetery in the woods behind there, like something was approaching you guys. Now, Joe and I were staying there. We heard that for sure. I mean, it turned us right around. But then you came out and came to us, and you mentioned that you felt that energy, something coming through you. And we, if you recall, we went back before we left there that night. We all said a kind of a prayer to bring peace and not have anything follow us. I don't think there was anything sinister in that cemetery that was going to attach itself, but there was definitely an old soul.
For sure. I think that was stuck.
That was stuck. Yeah. It said purgatory. Remember that?
It did. It did.
Purgatory.
That was an odd cemetery because it was so old. Most of the graves were in the 1800s, and some of them you could see had caved in, and also on the headstones, they no longer had any writing on there. So those had to have been pretty old.
Yeah, very old. And the presence that was there was communicating. Remember we put the, so this is good for your listeners to think about, but you know, one of the things we'll do in cemeteries, or we'll do with Bigfoot, is we'll bring motion lights, puck-sized motion lights out in the woods, and we'll put them on trees, circumference around a group where we're positioned. So if something is coming towards us, they can interact by turning them on, or the motion will turn itself on if we spy them or whatever. But I found with Bigfoot, you can talk to them and they'll kick those lights on. So they have the ability to, you know, make those things activate. But we were trying to get the ghost, at that point we thought it was a ghost. We were trying to get the ghost to interact by putting those motion lights on different gravestones and had no luck. But I think, didn't you light a candle at one point? Even we put a candle or something there. But it did not, the ghost did not, which just gets back to your point on this, it had to be an 1800s ghost, but the ghost did not understand what we were doing with the lights. You know, the
it
spirit.
Didn't.
Remember that? And so it was communicating to us through the spirit box, and it was saying lights, and it was like question mark. Didn't, I don't know. It said, I don't understand at one point.
Right.
You know, that was fascinating as could be, because we're communicating with a spirit. Leftover entity hasn't crossed over, to your point, from the 1800s. So it's 120, 150 years later, and like it's still there. We're having communication with it. It's fascinating.
And it was one of the other gentlemen. I think it was his first time in the graveyard. He was like, eh, I'm not a fan of that. But he finally came in and he went to bend down to get a better look at one of the headstones. And as he was descending down to get a good look at it, across the spirit box comes and it says, come sit with me. And it's like,
I know, it was amazing. You know, I became a big believer in the spirit box at that point, because it was cause effect. And you were doing a good job of asking questions, and they were coming across. I was moving around trying to put the different motion lights in places and get some, because I've had luck with that before with spirits, but for whatever reason, this spirit was not interacting with that, but it was answering questions. How many are there, you know, and all that kind of thing. And it was definitely interacting. We're getting single word answers, longer word, multiple word answers. So it was an active spirit. It's not a residual spirit or residual ghost entity. It was an active spirit.
Yeah. And at one point when you were walking away, it said, be careful, he will touch you. And then fast forward. Yeah. Later you're like, ooh, I'm kind of getting that feeling. So maybe it did come true.
Well, it did. So you're right. It did say that. As I was exiting, I left you and John there, because I started to walk out. Honest to God, I keep saying, because I've explained this to people, it felt like somebody turned on a hose with a spray nozzle on the front on wide, cold water, and just sprayed it all over me, like from head to toe. That's exactly what it felt like. It was like a wash of cold energy. And it was like it stuck to me and I went through it, and then it dissipated as I went away. And it didn't cling to me that night and keep going. But you're right, it said, he will touch you. And I think whatever that was went right through me.
Well, and I guess that's a good segue to my next question, which is, what other kind of paranormal activity have you encountered?
Well, Bigfooting, I have observed, relative to Bigfooting, I will say, I have observed the sphere orb thing a number of times. So if any of your listeners watch Skinwalker Ranch, and there's an episode on there where they caught an orb on one of the cameras and it's moving like it has intelligence. And they watched it, they observed it, and they analyzed it, but it was moving, stop, start, move around in a space. I've seen that. That to me, I don't know how Bigfoot does that or why that happens, but that's fascinating to me, how that it will follow you. I had one follow me. It's in northwestern Georgia a few years ago with a group, four of us out in the woods. We were expecting one other guy to catch up with us. We were down this trail, very narrow, with a creek following us. I was in the back, the other three were ahead. And I turned, I said, oh, here he comes. It was a guy named Jordan. He's on his way. He's catching. It was like 1:30 in the morning. Because I thought I saw a flashlight coming up the trail back behind us, 100 yards back. And I just turned, I watched, and it goes out. Then it comes back on, and it's moving. Then it gets down over the creek bed, and it's following up the creek. I'm like, whoa, that's not George with a flashlight. What? So I watched this thing coming like it had intelligence. It's moving along, coming up to see us. I had a group on an expedition in northern Wisconsin years ago in a gravel pit, a bunch of us. And there had to be 10 of us. We're all watching. It was rocks being thrown over the top of this gravel, but we're down below. And I had this group deployed. There was two of us, two investigators leading this group. And I always, whenever I do this stuff, and it's just good advice for any of your folks listening. If you're out in the woods, you're doing this, you got multiples, look in all directions. If your attention is drawn one way, look the other. So I was looking back at the wood line behind us. This, and here comes this orb out of the woods and floats right around the back of the group. It's in it. Nobody's seeing it. Came out of the top of the woods over the canopy, comes out. So right over the top of us, moving around, like it's looking at us, goes back into the woods and away. Like it had intelligence. It must have observed this thing for a minute. Didn't say anything to anybody about it. So I'm at a conference in the UP like a year and a half later, and the other guy that was there with me, a guy named Jim Sherman, he's an investigator in Michigan, and we're both talking with these ghost folks there that were there was a panel and stuff. And I bring this thing up and he goes, you saw that? Yeah, he was there too. I didn't want to tell anybody. I said, I didn't want to tell anybody either. So we both observed the same exact thing at the same time and never influenced each other's observations or thinking. So how can that be? At the same time, to get back to the paranormal aspect, I've been with people and three of us will see the eye shine in the woods looking right at us, and two in the group of five will say, I don't see it at all. I can't figure that out. There's a now you see him, now you don't thing with Bigfoot too. I've taken investigated loads of cases. And I had people in the past say, I was looking at a witness, I was staring right at it, and then it was gone. I can't figure that out. Another aspect of these things is they seem to have dissolve. People call it the predator thing. You've heard that for the movie Predator, where it looks like it's shimmering in there. I've observed that. And I saw one that was like 4 feet tall running down a trail, and it like shimmered its way into invisibility. Just went right out. So how does that happen? You know, people see it, and then it's kind of phasing in and out. Hard to come up with a good physical explanation for that. I know there's a whole lot of discussion about transparent hair follicles and all this sort of thing. I don't know. And I've actually looked at hair that I've got some in my possession now. I got from a witness. But from one side, it looks one color. From the other side, it looks another. So, you know, I can't figure that out. But there are aspects to these things that probably are. I always, people say to me, what do you think they are, Rick? And I say, physical beings with paranormal capability. And I firmly believe that they have abilities we don't have. You know, how can you turn invisible? How can you be there 1 second and then be gone? How can you generate an orb to follow people around? They mimic everything and they're great at it. You know, so, but other things happen around them too. We've observed UFOs all of a sudden seem to be above us, something. The group I was with 2 weeks ago, we saw this one, this UFO came out of the woods, is above us, multicolored, two of us saw it. And it was making these shifting motions from one spot to another, herky-jerky, stopped dead, then took off. Can't explain that. UFOs show up around these things. Ghost activity shows up around these. These things are around graveyards a lot. I picked up Land Between the Lakes in between Tennessee and Kentucky. That strip is notorious for being very paranormal. A lot of Bigfoot activity, dogman activity reported there. If you read any of Martin Grove's books, it's all on the dogman activity there. He's done great research on it. Scary as hell. But I've been in there on Bigfoot type stuff. Gotten pictures of things. I'm a fan of taking random pictures around cemeteries, especially at night, during the day. I've gotten pictures of faces in the woods during the day. Not pareidolia either. I mean, real creepy looking things looking at you. So when you're around these things, weird stuff happens. And it's not all negative. Sometimes it's euphoric. You mentioned zapping. I've been zapped by these things a few times. I've had it feel like electrical energy coursing through my body, like I was stuck a screwdriver in a socket. And I've had it feel euphoric, too, where it felt like you were elevating above everybody and it just took a bong hit or something. It's crazy. I mean, stuff happens around these things that you just can't explain.
The paranormal aspect of these creatures really interests me a lot, because when you were talking and sharing your experience about saying, is that a flashlight? That just really stuck out to me, because in my own encounter that I had in that same area where we had our expedition back in November, I literally almost said the same thing verbatim. I even at one point was like, are those headlights? Because they were that bright. And so when you said that, I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've seen that for myself.
Yeah. And how that it will look like it's following you. And the color of it, fascinating to me, is it's often like a cue ball or an old car headlight, not like the new blue LEDs or anything. Although I did in Iowa years ago see two creatures on a trail, and they were projecting that blue eye shine down on the trail in front of them as they were walking. So I could see these shadows, and it was coming out. But a lot of times it is that cue ball color.
The first sighting that I'd seen, it was a white color, like mm-hmm. you're saying. A lot of people talk about, okay, why don't we have more pictures or video evidence? And it just happens so quickly, honestly, mm-hmm. under 15 seconds, under 10 seconds, yep. most of the time. And yep. you're not able to just capture what you're seeing.
Well, we did see it, and it was there, and it came. It was not that far away. I always try to make sure it's not a star rising through the woods and the canopy and stuff. And that was definitely, that was down in the woods. It was way bigger than that. A softball, grapefruit size kind of thing, but. And it was there. It moved, shifted a little bit. It was there. It got a little brighter because I had enough time. One of the things that we did that was smart when we were in that spot, that little holler, is we all pick a different direction. So I've been on enough of these that I always kind of, you know, if you, everybody takes, you have four people, northeast, southwest, whoever's sitting west is looking east over the shoulder of the person in east looking west. So you're always kind of looking and, you know, over someone's shoulder is a good way to do this. So you can observe. And that thing in the woods came up behind me. I had enough time to get up, turn around and look and see it. And you guys were already seeing it. So it was, you know, it was definitely there for, you know, if anything you observe like that in the woods for 10, 15 seconds, it's actually fairly long in the woods for something to happen like that. So it was fascinating. And again, I don't know why that happened. My feeling is those things, they use them to observe. And I think it was, they were coming in a little closer, you know, whether they use it like a periscope or something, that it was put there to observe us. They were observing us. Just kind of what it was. But I didn't feel threatened that night. We did, if you recall, later as the night went on, about 90 degrees from where that was, we heard other noises, stick breaks and other things happening. So I think there was more than one coming in. But they had that first night, we had responses from the river. River was fairly far from us. I think they were in that river area and then came to see what the heck we were doing, which is textbook how to research these things. Put yourself in a place to be observed, do some provocation. Don't be threatening, and they come around. In the laser lights that we did, you know, they came around. We're laughing. People are in the woods, middle of the night, laughing, having a good time, not hunting, not trying to trick them. You can't do that. They will come around. They're intense observers. They will come around and see. I think they're observers during the day. They are at night. If you're in their living room at night and you're not threatening, you know, they're going to come around. Why wouldn't they?
That brings me back to time of day, because I often you hear people say that they're more nocturnal, but then you will look in the BFRO's database and you'll see a lot of sightings that maybe happen at dawn or sometimes around dusk. And I always say this to people too, you have just as great of a chance of driving down the road and having something walk in front of you in these rural areas as you are us going out into the woods, because so many sightings, you'll hear them crossing the road. Or do you find that there is a correlation between time of day?
Well, I think when the sun is straight overhead and bright, most animals, most things that are in the woods are very wary. I mean, if you go fishing, I look at it, you know, I used to do a lot of fishing, still do some, but the worst time for fishing is noon because the sun is bright and it's straight. There's no shadows in the rocks and the water or anything. So the fish have to hide, find a place to. They're not going to come around and grab bait when they can't do it from a shadow. So I think it's the same with animals in the woods, Bigfoot in the woods. So when the sun is bright overhead, it's not to say you won't. I was on an expedition with Charlie Raymond and a group in Kentucky a couple of years ago. We were in this property in the middle of the day back in the woods, and it was like 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and we did, it's a big group of us, had to be 15 of us, and we did a knock and immediately got a loud knock response right around the corner from us. And I mean, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so they don't have to do that, but they did respond. I like right at dusk. I like to get out in the woods right at, just as the sun is going behind the horizon, so I can see my surroundings. And I think that's a very productive time. And if you recall, both those first two nights I was with you, first night and second night, as soon as we got to location, we did something and immediately got responses. So it's almost like they're very active then. I also think that 3 to 5 in the morning time frame, there's a reason it's called a witching hour, but they're moving. They're active then, very, very much. And I used to do a lot of Bigfooting right before the sun came up. I'd drive to spots in the woods, trailheads. I'd get out and start to enter the trail. Just the sun was coming up. I had activity all the time. And I don't think people are doing that. The only people that do it are hunters, and that's in the fall. And they got a red blaze, orange, and they're carrying guns. The Bigfoots know what that is. But if I'm in June, this time of year, and I'm entering a trail just before the sun comes up to get back in there. I have had good luck. Daytime scouting is great, but to go back at night, I've been with groups that they'll say, well, they don't want to go out until 10, 11 o'clock and everything when it's dark. I don't believe that at all. I'm very much get into your spot, get yourself situated, and you know, you have a lot of you can have a lot of good experiences.
We did scout those locations during the day, so we were very familiar with where we were going to go. So you feel comfortable going back at nighttime. We even set aside some supplies because we are hiking to most of these places. So that way your pack isn't too heavy. We actually left stuff because we knew we were coming back. That's what I like about camping. I love being able to go out and research during the day, but really immersing yourself in the environment and getting to stay out there for a few days is absolutely my favorite thing to do. That is my favorite way to research.
Yeah, I agree. It's practice when you do a Bigfoot type of, get on a Bigfoot expedition, whatever, best practice is to, you know, get at night. A lot of times, you know, the DFR Rollins, we'll have the investigators get there ahead of time, a day or two ahead. So Tuesday and Wednesday, the group comes in on Thursday, but we've done some daytime scouting and months before too, but we'll know the forest roads to go on and where to put people to deploy them so they can be best seen. We always look for places to put people so they can be seen. And in walking groups, make sure the trails, see them during the day, make sure, you know, they can be traversed at night so you're not falling down a ravine or something. You know, so we do that sort of thing too. Well, and sometimes it gets dangerous at night. If you get scared at night, all of a sudden something, you know, scares you in the woods at night and you take a wrong step and go down a 200-foot ravine, that's a problem. You know, you got to do what you're doing during the day. That's best practice. We'll do that in a BFR expedition. We'll get out at night, but during the day, we have groups go out to different places so they can check it out, so they see what it looks like. And quite often, the group goes out during the day, maybe finds a footprint, finds stick right. structures, and they get enthusiastic, want to go back to that area at night. That's great. That's exactly what you want. So they can get to an area at night and they can do what we do, which is build a fire. I like very much to put people in a spot where you could build a fire and be observed, just sit, have three people do that, and then another three, a group of six, go walk the trails. And you walkie-talkie back and forth, or you do relay. One does a whoop, and the group 200 yards away does a whoop back. That attracts attention, and it works very, very well. And the other thing, too, when you go out at night, very much when you arrive at a trailhead or a trail you're going to be on or a spot, quite often, as soon as you get out of the car, you get those recorders on, but things happen right away. It's like they tell everybody else, hey, they're here. You know, I was on one in South Carolina a year ago, and we got to this spot, group of five. As soon as we got out, a few of us were going to sit, and a few were going to walk these trails down into a shooting range. It was deep in the woods. And immediately heard a howl out of the woods. It was just amazing, blood-curdling long, one of those classic Ohio howls, 7-8 second howls. It was just fantastic. You got to have your ears open, but in order to be best at that, you really do need to look at the spot during the day. So as soon as you get to a spot, you can quickly have the recorders on, everybody take a position and look in different directions. So that takes the education you get during the day.
Is there anything new that you're working on, possibly another book or any upcoming expeditions that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, again, you can get it. We have an Etsy store. I know Squatch, and you can get some of our original merchandise. We do all our own artwork. We got a number of trademarks on it and things. The Stick Structure book is available there on the site. People can get that there. I'll be at, I speak at a number of things during the year, but I'm doing coming up in August, the Marion, Western North Carolina Bigfoot Festival. There's another one in the central part of North Carolina in Uwari. I haven't been to. I'm going to do that. And I'll probably do one in South Carolina in the fall too. And maybe one in Kentucky I'll do get to later near Crypticon. That's always a real good one. So I got a number of festivals to be at this year. I'm usually at different ones, different portions of the year. A lot of them I'm fortunate enough to get a chance to speak at. And then I'm working with, you talked to Lori Wade the other day. I talked to her recently, and she's looking at an expedition and maybe in northern Georgia that'll be posted on the BFRO site. So folks out there are interested in these anywhere, go on the BFRO site, bfro.net, and you can look at where the expeditions are around the country and see who's running them. I'm working on maybe running one in November. I'm trying to nail down some detail on that, so we'll see. But that you'd be great. You're great too. You're real good to get out in the woods because you're using your five senses very well. You're very much a listener, engager, and all that, which is really good. And you need that in research. I mean, we use all kinds of equipment, FLIRs and night vision and parabolic microphones, all kinds of stuff. And in the end, five senses.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how it works.
I thank you so much for coming on. I love hearing other researchers' experiences, especially ones like yourself who have been in the field for a long time, well-respected, very knowledgeable. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Brooke. Thanks for having me. And I've listened to your podcast. I like what you're doing. You're very open-minded, cover a lot of different subjects. And podcasts, I'm a big fan of them because I think it's the way people learn these days. You can go for a walk and listen to a podcast. If you're on a drive, you can listen to a podcast. It's the way people learn about subject matter these days, you know, probably more than reading. So it's just a nice way to communicate. I love to get on these and just talk about subject matter that I know is real from experience. And I'm here to tell your listeners, keep an open mind on any of this kind of stuff. And Bigfoot is real. So I have definitely experienced it, know that they're out there. Can't explain them all, but I know they're there. Thank you, Brooke. Thanks for having me.
That's a wrap on this episode of Dark Florida. A huge thank you to Rick Rellis for joining us tonight and sharing his incredible experiences, insight, and knowledge from years in the field. If you're intrigued by stick structures, trust me, you'll want to grab a copy of his book, Field Guide to Bigfoot Stick Structures. And don't forget to check out his music under Just Rick and visit I Know Squatch for some of the coolest Bigfoot merch around. As always, if you've had a strange encounter, unexplained sighting, or just want to talk about the weird side of the woods, I want to hear from you. Email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com and follow along and get updates on the show on Instagram at darkfloridapodcast. Subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/darkflorida411. And if you love the show and want to support what I do, you can head on over to buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review, share it with your fellow cryptid chaser, or send it to that one friend who still doesn't believe in Bigfoot. Until next time, keep your mind open, be kind, and stay curious and stay strange. This is Brooke Moreland signing off from the Sunshine State.